Welcome to another episode of MK Crypto Diaries. I am your host, Dr. Justine Sherry Herrera, and we are recording today's episode on the 20th of December 2022, which makes this the last episode of the year. And what an interesting year it has been. Today, we will be speaking about proof of reserves. After the collapse of FTX, we saw a knee-jerk reaction from many prominent exchanges, such as Crypto.com, Gate.io, Binance, and many others, where they were posting their so-called proof of reserves. Are these wallet snapshots actually proof of reserves? Were proper accounting tools used? Were these numbers actually audited by external professional independent audit firms? Will regulation help ensure that clients' funds are being segregated and proper audits are being conducted? To shed some light on these answers, we have with us Jason Mayers. Jason Mayers is the lead architect at AuditChain. AuditChain is a decentralized accounting, reporting, audit, and analysis protocol that automates and provides proof of assurance on the world's financial and business information. Jason, thank you so much for accepting this invitation and joining us for today's interesting discussion centering around proof of reserves. Incidentally, for you, the listener, Jason is also a podcast host himself on a podcast show called AuditChain. So thanks, Jason. Let's get right into it. So after the fall of FTX, we saw many prominent exchanges such as Crypto.com, Gate.io, Binance, and many others post their proof of reserves. So can you shed some light on why this reaction was prompted in the market?
So it was an attempt to restore confidence, but the public seems to have gotten the wrong idea about what a proof of reserves report is. First, there is no proof. Second, there is no reserves because there is no reserve requirement that's mandated by a regulator. But it operates under the assumption that for every dollar deposited by a depositor, there is $1 in value to back it up. So that was the reason for the rush to provide the proof of reserves reports, but they're not audits. They're agreed upon procedures, which is a negotiation between the exchange and the professional services firm that's writing the report.
Yes, I agree. So obviously after FTX, you know, it was catastrophic and it was definitely not what the market needed, especially in these times. And persons, all users, I'm guessing, you know, were afraid that there was no segregation of clients' funds being done and that, I guess, that their funds were not actually safe. So as a reaction to restore confidence, as you said, everyone was posting, look, this is how rich we are. These are all the cryptos we have. Your assets are fine. But as we will delve a bit deeper into this, as you correctly stated, these were not proper audits. So just to delve a bit deeper, so observers in this space have actually caught some exchanges transfer large amounts of crypto to each other's wallets before taking snapshots of these funds before being posted on for the public on certain platforms. So, for example, CoinMarketCap introduced a new feature on their website titled Launched of Proof of Reserves feature for SEXs to be able to add their assets and post snapshots of their wallets showing how much reserves or assets they actually have. So can you sort of give a bit of an explanation of what is going on there? Are these snapshots of wallets and CoinMarketCap's new feature on the platform showing real proof of reserves? Is there some kind of misconception of what proof of reserves actually is? And do you think this is part of some, you know, international false propaganda plan from the community? Sort of, is it a deliberate move?
So let's go back to the the transferring of value back and forth. So if you think of the 500 million that was hacked out of FTX, and imagine for a moment that it likes to photobomb other people's photos, right? So it shows up just before a proof of reserve snapshot, and it photobombs. Mm-hmm. There's a joke in our amongst our team that $500 million hack has been the subject of everyone's proof of reserves, right? So it's kind of like this celebrity almost that shows up in every other photo, right? Every other snapshot. Mm-hmm. But of course I'm joking, but I'm not joking. The problem with a proof, first of all, let's examine what a proof of, I don't even like using the term, the public has really grabbed it and they don't even realize what they've grabbed. That type of report is an agreed upon procedure. It's a negotiation, as I stated earlier. And what happens is the exchange and the professional services firm negotiates an agreement, and the exchange says, there's a number on the wall. Can you see it? The professional services firm says, we're not going to state whether or not we've seen it. We will include it in the report, but we're going to say that you provided it. Mm. And the exchange says, well, will you say that, will you express some sort of an opinion? And the professional services firm says, no, we're not expressing any opinions. We're not giving any assurances. And we need to add a statement in a number of places in the report that says you should not rely on this report. Right? So it's not proof of anything. Mm-hmm. But look, exchanges are starting to think the right way, and we're moving in the right direction. But the work we do involves the entire operating entity, not just custody, right? Because what happens in custody also depends upon whether or not the technology used to custody assets resides and is owned by the same operating entity that is custodying the funds and that's providing the order matching engine, right? So the custody environment alone is a very, there's no way to provide any assurance or any proof of solvency by looking only at custody. So the way regular banks are regulated, as you probably know, is if I deposit a dollar in my bank, it shows up as an asset on the balance sheet of the bank, but it also shows up on the liability section because it's payable to me on demand, right? Mm-hmm. So if an exchange has, or a bank in this case, has $1.05 billion in assets. 50 million is theirs because it's the result of accumulation of paid in retained earnings, maybe paid in capital because they raise capital, operating profits for that period. And then they have $1 billion in customer assets. So the balance sheet is going to look like $1.05 billion in assets and $1 billion in liabilities. The equity is 50 million, right? That's the state of the entity. The 50 million is owned by the bank. Mm-hmm. Everything else is owned by depositors. But that's the way it's articulated on a balance sheet. There's very, very good reasons for that. It really makes the bank far more accountable. And what the crypto space has been, you know, it's this is antithetical to the philosophy of truly decentralized finance, right? But when you are a centralized market infrastructure provider, that way of accountability is far more important from a regulatory standpoint, from a depositor standpoint. Mm-hmm. So exchanges, if you really look at the most strictest banking regulations, are acting like banks without registering as banks. Mm-hmm. And without getting permission to lend customer assets and hypothecate and rehypothecate assets.
Of course, emulating the shadow banking industry, really, just all right. Over again. Mm-hmm. And here it seems like we're really missing some basic concepts of accounting. When it has, you know, you mentioned balance sheets and equity and reserves and custody assets and operating income. So here, just, you know, posting a snapshot of someone's wallet is not proof of anything, really and truly. So there's the audit element, which is obviously missing, which is essential and in my opinion quite elementary when it comes to accounting. So regardless if you're in crypto or not in crypto, sort of these are just the basic elements of accounting. In your opinion, when it comes to accounting, is there a difference between traditional accounting and crypto accounting of transactions?
No. Total assets minus total liabilities will always mm-hmm. equal equity, to the same extent that 1 + 1 will always equal 2. Mm-hmm. This was documented 700 years ago by Luca Pacioli, right? For the Venetian merchants, to help the Medici reconcile with their counterparties and the Venetian merchants to be able to do business and record their books in a far more of a, I can't use the word real time, but more efficient way, right? So the answer is no. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't matter what it is you have to account for. Now, the United States recently announced that you'll be able to use fair market value accounting to treat crypto assets in US GAAP, right? IFRS has not done so yet, but I'm sure they'll follow, right? The treatment of crypto assets as with fair market value provides a more accurate picture of the truth of state mm-hmm. of an operating entity, right? The biggest beneficiary of which would be MicroStrategy, because 90% of their assets are in Bitcoin.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Right? So...
Mm-hmm. So I would say the difference isn't in accounting or as you said, liability and custody and
it's nomenclature. Mm-hmm. The difference is in nomenclature, what they're calling it. Proof mm-hmm. of reserves is not a thing. Mm-hmm. Armenino, I believe, came up with that term, but there's no proof and there's no reserves. Mm-hmm. Or excuse me, there's no reserve requirement. Mm-hmm.
No, completely agree. I would say the only difference is in terms of how you account and the terms and the tools that you use. And when it comes to this, I'd like to mention the Merkle tool, which is something you've been advocating about yourselves at Audit Chain. So you and your team members at Audit Chain have been working on a crypto accounting tool called the Merkle tool and getting to the Merkle root. Can you please explain and shed some light on what this tool is and how it works in the realm of crypto accounting?
So first, I want to clear up a few things. Mm-hmm. Accounting is the language of business. The way the language of business is communicated is through financial reporting. Okay, just to make things very, very clear. We don't do accounting. We do reporting and external validation. We don't call it audit yet because it doesn't fit into a regulatory box just yet, mm-hmm. right? We believe that scientifically, it is a higher quality and better method of providing assurance than a comprehensive audit engagement agreement with a traditional entity, or a crypto exchange like Coinbase, who undergoes a comprehensive annual audit and quarterly reviews. The difference is these reports that have been published focus on only cryptography. There's no language.
Okay.
Right. What we do is we combine semantics with cryptography. And the semantic layer is based upon a global standard across 60 jurisdictions and 100 regulatory agencies. It's called Extensible Business Reporting Language. It is the dialect of regulators, right? So by combining that semantic ontology with cryptography, you're not only proving the way we look at an operating entity is we look at it from a computer science perspective. It is a state machine. And for those who are listening that have a background in computer science, they'll understand what that means. In our world, one input must trigger a minimum of four outputs: P&L, balance sheet, cash flow, equity statement. They all have this interlocutory relationship because they're actually a series of multidimensional knowledge graphs. So a financial statement in our world is not only made with cryptography, but it's made out of semantics and it's multidimensional, which means that we've basically turned an operating entity into a blockchain. Its external validators or auditors, if you will, into its miners, validators, and all four of its financial statements into its block explorer. Now, you're not going to be able to click all the way back to an invoice number or an address or the name of the customer or vendor, but you can prove with mathematical, I'm not going to use the word certainty because cryptographers always tell me not to, with mathematical assurance that $1 in triggers the impact to all four financial statements. But this includes operating activities as well as custody when you look at it from an exchange perspective, right? So they generate revenue. That's included. There's expenses. That's included. The entity borrows money to operate, right? That's included. And this all affects cash flow. It affects statement of changes in stockholders' equity, right? You've got cash provided by operating activities, the receipt of cash from selling your thing. Whether it's dog bones or crypto exchanges, it doesn't matter. It's still accounting, right? So you've got cash provided by operating activities, cash used in operating activities. That's outgoing, right? Cash provided by financing activities. I'm either selling equity and receiving value, or I'm selling debt and receiving value, borrowing money, right? Then there's cash used in financing activities. I'm the one making the investment. I'm either buying equity or I'm lending someone else money, right? And there are balances at the beginning of the period and at the end of the period, right? Again, this is documented 700 years ago.
Is this tool sort of being used by any current cryptocurrency exchanges at the moment? You don't need to divulge names, but perhaps just to get an idea if it's a good product market fit or being relied on by some of the operators in the space.
The answer is yes. We can't announce any names yet. We will likely make announcements within the next 7 days.
Amazing. Okay, that's great.
Which I wish may we have had already this been announced by the time you publish this podcast. Maybe.
It would have been good if we had our discussion in 7 days. We could have made an announcement too. amazing. All right. And Do you think that exchanges should work with them, should work together with regulated custodians to segregate exchange activities and custody activities? Or do you think that offering both services under one roof is sustainable? So do you think we should emulate the traditional sphere and segregate settlement and custody and exchange? Or do you think for crypto, it is sort of allowed to be different so long as there are proper, let's say, governance procedures in place?
I think it's too dangerous to have custody and exchange under the same roof.
There should be segregation.
Yeah, there should be segregation. And they should be two separate entities, and there should be proof that they're not under common ownership. And if they are under common ownership, there should be two separate and distinct independent oversight boards of directors. That are charged with implementing the necessary controls to prevent the commingling of funds and manipulation of the control environments need to be totally separate, under separate audit, as if they were separately owned companies.
I agree. So you can have within the same structure, you know, the same activities, but being hosted from different entities with different accounting procedures, different risk procedures, and
that's correct,
etc.
Yep.
Okay. And just sort of a last question to tie all this up. Mazars, who has been being mentioned in all the news recently as they are the main auditors of various cryptocurrency operators, has recently announced that they have suspended all their services vis-a-vis crypto firms. Why do you think this is?
Because the public has a bad idea about what those reports really are. They're nothing, right? They're nothing. It was an opportunity to generate a lot of revenue without going on the hook, without expressing any opinions, without giving any assurances, and with the disclaimer that you shouldn't rely on that report, right? And it's not just Mazars, the entire assurance profession has pulled out of providing crypto services. Not only that, but the most recent reports have been withdrawn by the accounting firms, right? If you do that in the public company space, when an auditor withdraws their audit report, it's the death knell for that company. The death knell. It's over, right? So, the other reason why we believe they did that is there was an announcement by the SEC 2 weeks ago where they published a sample letter that they sent out to various different publicly traded companies, we believe soon to be all publicly traded companies, that provides a list of questions and required answers, which results in a much heightened level of disclosure about your exposure to digital assets, if any, right? That has to be reviewed. When you add those disclosures, your auditor reviews them, right? So it placed the audit profession in a very awkward position. There are no audit standards for crypto right now. Standards, right? Methodology is something else. Standards, there is none, right? And it's too risky for them. And the bigger they are, the smaller it is. It's the, you know, the smaller part of the business. It's a small part of their business. It's not worth it. So that leaves all of these centralized market infrastructure providers in a very, very precarious position. Audit chain is the only solution they can use that's viable. One, it's scientific. Two, it's all-encompassing. And three, the audit is done by a plurality of external validators, an army of external validators, like a blockchain. It's blockchain style external validation for an operating entity. And we fear that there'll be an outflow of a significant amount of value from centralized exchanges if they don't find a solution. And we believe that the SEC's efforts, along with the accounting industry's efforts, is designed in a big way to kill most of them until the ones who are strong enough can comply with whatever new audit standards, regulations, or other that will come into existence, we believe, very, very soon.
No, definitely. It's just a matter of time. And obviously, things are progressing at different speeds depending on where you are in the world. For
That's
Europe,
correct.
It's literally 3 months away. And within 3 months, I mean, MiCA already addresses segregation of clients' funds, quarterly reporting, yearly audits. So it is just a matter of time where we operate in such a fluid and non-transparent manner, which I think at the end will be for the good and for the long sustainable ride that we hopefully will endure. So thank you so much, Jason. This has been really, really insightful and really, really valuable. And I think that you are working on such an amazing tool, which I hope will be adopted by many, as it will definitely attribute to the validation and reputation where all these operators do need to have in order to remain trustworthy players in the market. Before I let you go, I'd just like to invite you for a very quick round of I Call Bullshit. I will read out the following statement and just let me know if you think it's true or false. So okay. According to Crypto Slate, in October, Crypto.com transferred nearly 85% of ETH reserves to Gate.io. CEO Chris Marsalek tweeted, "It was supposed to be a move to new cold storage address, but was sent to a whitelisted external address instead. We worked with Gate team and the funds were returned to our cold storage." True or false?
False.
This is actually true. This actually happened.
I believe it happened.
You
said this was I Call Bullshit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm calling bullshit. You call bullshit.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. However, you call bullshit, but in actual fact, this actually happened. So if you call bullshit, it's the reverse. However, this actually happened and there was this transfer of 85% ETH reserves to Gate and then it was returned. All right, perfect. Thank you so much, Jason. I really, really enjoyed our episode. If you want to reach out to Jason, you can reach him on LinkedIn. Anywhere else, Jason?
Twitter.
LinkedIn.
Jason Myers NYC.
And you can follow him and his team's work at AuditChain. So please look him up and get in touch if you'd like to explore his services further. So thank you very, very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and share and subscribe. And until next time, thank you for listening.